I've been doing software engineering for 16 years in the same job in IDBS, thanks to the IDBS people who came today. That time has been primarily doing object-oriented programming with C++ initially, and then Java. Actually, almost all of it has been that. And then there's been a few bits and pieces of VBA and PLSQL and the things you can't avoid, SQL, in fact, and all sorts of bits and pieces like that. IDBS software is used all around the world. It's, I'm not sure, about 50,000 scientists all around the world using IDBS bits and pieces, which, given that we've been doing that for 15 years, and it takes about 10 years for a drug to go from kind of initial screening release into clinical trials, I haven't been taking any drugs for the last 5 years. It's all a bit frightening. I didn't have any qualifications in software engineering until very recently. I took a part-time MSc. I did a part-time MSc at Oxford University starting in 2006 because I wanted to fill in some of the background that, you know, I didn't really know about computer science. I'd just done programming. Programming as in software engineering, as in building systems that people actually use, but I didn't really know anything, you know, when people started talking about algorithms or formal methods or all this kind of stuff. I was blank. Went off and did some Java instead. So I went to do this course, and the first course I did was Software Engineering Mathematics. At least it was called Software Engineering Mathematics. By the way, this Oxford part-time course, highly recommended. So I ended up doing lots of the mathematical and the formal methods and the bit of functional programming, lots of declarative stuff, which was a bit of a shock. You know, in fact, doing the Software Engineering Maths course, it was, you know, we went into proofs on day two, having done set theory and mathematical basis for stuff. But I enjoyed it very much, but it did make me feel very small. We actually stayed in a little cottage, and I cycled across the fields to my daughter. You have to be affiliated with a college to do the MSc, and you know it tends to be some of the poorer colleges that you. Well, that slide had more mileage than I expected. So as part of that course, obviously software engineering mathematics was actually leading into a course about specification and design. To cut a long story short, it was about the Z notation. So I was learning about the Z notation, and of course the intention was that I was learning about set theory and doing things declaratively and modeling while I was in the process. And so modeling became a bit of an interest to me. So it was actually doing that course, which was the first course I did, that I started coming up with some of the ideas for JSizzle, which is, of course, what we're talking about today. So today, the idea is to talk about modeling. Now, JSizzle, of course, is a one-man band, open source, slap it together for a dissertation in MSc, a kind of tool. So what I'm trying to get across here is more about the idea. So if I miss out the kind of abstract level, then let me know if I dive too much into the JSizzle details. So the idea is to talk about modeling and modeling how it relates to implementation. So we're going to work through a worked example. So the whole thing is going to be done by worked example, so we're not going to spend lots of time talking about Z notation. Although I have got one slide on. You'll have to kind of ramble about Z and stop me if I go on too long. It says model-driven development there. I don't really mean model-driven development in the sense of drawing things out in UML and then pressing a button and getting a magic implementation. I don't know if anybody's got any experience of model-driven development tools. There's a few nods. Yeah, so I actually don't have any experience of model-driven development tools myself. So I'm not here to actually talk about model-driven development, whether it's good or bad. What I'm talking about here is a bit more abstract. I'm saying, how do we relate a model to implementation code? Because it strikes me, and you know, I've spent a lot of time in my life drawing out things on pieces of paper, drawing things out on whiteboards, coming up with ideas around a coffee machine, and then going away and implementing them. And you know, 5 weeks later, or indeed after the product's been released 6 months later, somebody points out a conceptual flaw with the whole thing and says, "Well, where's your traceability back to your model?" And you know, at least half of the time there isn't one, as in there isn't a model at all. The other half of the time, there's some notes that have been put together in a document. Other times, there's some informal diagrams. Maybe there's some UML. But even then, the actual relationship of that UML to the code that's been written is gone. It's long gone. And it probably doesn't relate anyway. As in what you actually implemented, you changed your mind as you were going through. And you know, it all changed. Requirements changed, as they always do, that kind of thing. We'll tangentially, I mean, it's going to be based in Java. Sorry, JSON is based in Java, so if anybody's not familiar with Java, well, nothing really. hopefully it'll all be quite familiar. jQuery is a tool that kind of spun off from jSizzle along the way, because as I was doing jSizzle, I kind of noticed that there was lots of declarative and interesting functional stuff we could do that I could do as an aside, so I did. So we'll see jQuery as we're going along, but this isn't really a talk about it. I'll cut straight to the chase. This is the bottom line. You can leave after this line. The idea here is to do modeling in a language that compiles down to Java classes. Now, by compiles down to Java classes, I don't mean that you generate Java classes out of it. I mean, it literally compiles into Java classes so that you can instrument and animate your model. And you can relate your model to the implementation code using Java. It really is as simple as that. And we'll see how that all works as we go along. So let's talk about you for a minute. There's always the kind of thought that, which has been in the back of my mind all the time doing this, that doing modeling in something that is related to an object-oriented language is interesting, because what object orientation allows you to do is to build levels of abstraction. So you can start with your interfaces, and you can work down through various things till you end up in Java beans sitting in an EJB container, for example. So it strikes me that object-oriented languages are already pretty good at this, right? But perhaps not in some ways, and we'll kind of hit some of those things as we go along. And maybe, of course, I might be completely wrong. It might be that you can just do it in Smalltalk and it'll be fine. So the distinction here, that perhaps I didn't make clear, I think I didn't, is that the models you build in jSizzle do not compile into implementation classes. They compile into model classes. As in, they're classes that you can use, and we'll just dive into it and we'll show you how. So, what I was going to do was take a quick survey on what people use for kind of modeling tools. Now, let's tie it down a bit further, because I don't want to try and solve the whole UML problem here. Let's say that you've been handed the requirements to a new system. You've done some domain analysis. You've kind of, the usual thing, you've pointed out that the requirements are actually assuming a system, assuming an implementation, and you go back to them and say, no, I want to know what your actual problem is. And then you go around the houses a bit and do some modeling of the domain. You might do some activity modeling in UML or whatever. And you get to the point where you want to start talking about, well, what are the kind of major classes of my system? In object-oriented parlance. So what things am I talking about here? So if we're talking about talks at the BCS, we might say, well, there's something called talk, and I want to make some statements about talk, and there's something called the speaker, and hopefully there's one speaker per talk, or you might want to make constraints like that. So you can do that with a UML class diagram, right? I mean, a lot of people, I don't know. Do some people not realize that you can use a UML diagram to describe something that's not an implementation class? I think probably most people are quite happy with that. So I expect UML is something that people use. Who here would dive into UML in that kind of scenario? 3, 4, 5, something like that. So what are we talking about? Tool. This is a bit contrived. 5. How many people would dive into Z? Yay! Sorry, no. Anything else? Using UML, or can I put that under the UML bucket? Or have you got some other formalisms in Enterprise Architect that you're using beyond UML? Anything else? I mean, there's a few things out there. There's a pseudocode, right? Yeah, okay. Yeah. And there's something called Spock, which I've heard of and kind of occasionally downloaded. Occasionally looked at on the website and gone, is that really what we want? I don't know. Who knows? I'll just put Spock on there and say 0. Sorry. Fair enough. You probably would have gone to, oh, that's fascinating. Okay, that's great, because that's Let's put you down for small talk. Does that mean I take you off UML?
Oh, whatever.
Whatever. So perhaps we want to capture how many people are actually happy with that versus unhappy. So, well, I don't know. How do you define happiness? I don't know. Who's happy with UML? One person's happy with UML. Sorry, two people. Oh, actually, loads of people are happy with UML. Something like that. This is a bit contrived. I'm not actually going to make any use of this information here. So, I mean, the other thing I might want to do is say, well, there's kind of a high-level distinction between state modeling and behavioral modeling, right? So state modeling is the kind of thing you might want to do with a class diagram. These are your major moving parts, and these are this is the kind of state that it can bring along with it. And then there's kind of, well, what are the processes we're talking about here? So you could talk about state and behavior. Oh, Christ, what would you do then? Yeah, you probably want to take that and drag that over there. No, hang on, what am I doing? No, I want a copy of it. I want that over. I want that over there, and I want to make a copy of that. That's what I want. Oh no, but I want the happy and the state to be the other way. So this is some kind of modelling thing. I clearly I did. Excel zero. No, zero happy. 10 million. In this scenario. All right, so the extremely contrived point I want to make is that Excel is actually a rubbish tool for what I want to do here. So I'm going to delete all that out and say, well, hang on, and lead into my worked example, which is basically I want a better tool than Excel. Oops, I don't want to actually do it. I want to have a tool that understands that this is a definition of a categorical variable and that these are the values of that variable and that this is another example of a categorical variable, and these are the items of that variable, and that these cells here, are addressed by the categorical variables that make up them. And I've actually got three dimensions, so I want a tool that can do multi-dimensional stuff. So what I really want is something that looks a bit like, oh no, hang on. So what I'm going to do is this. Put this in at the last minute. Thank you to KCD. So I'm going to over-engineer a solution. what I really want is something that looks a bit like that. I want to have categorical variables. I want to be able to even drag them around. So I want to be able to say, this happiness, I can just swap that around with modeling, and my data will move around in the appropriate way so that it's all properly addressed, right? And you know, and maybe I even want to take these variables and move them down here. Can you see my cursor? Except it's behind my head. I want to move them down here. So it's all in one column, maybe. That kind of thing. So these are my major moving parts in the thing I want to actually model. I've got some kind of notion of cells. I've got some kind of notion of categories. And I've got some kind of notion of items of those categories. That's what I wanted when I did that. Maybe when I have that tool, I can come back to you guys and actually find out about modeling tools that exist at the moment. So, oh yeah, I didn't point out JSON. No, nobody uses JSizzle, do they? People one on the list. So, well, we don't use JSizzle at IDBS, unfortunately, because I haven't yet persuaded them that that's a good idea to do. What I've used it for is some examples. Some of the examples that were used during the course, and I've used it on itself, so it models itself. And I did use it for messing around with this tool, and I used it on a recent healthcare project that we were doing, and I think that's the limit of its usage. There's definitely a guy out there. I don't know if he's in the audience who's downloaded it and tried it on Debian, and it didn't work. Well, it kind of did. He figured out what the problem was and swapped around a couple of variables, and it was fine. Anyway, so if we were in UML land, we might want to do something like this. Now, this is just a suggestion. I mean, all models are different, right? There's always lots of different ways of modeling something. So this is just one way that you might choose to do it. You might want to say, well, what's this thing? It's a matrix. I should call it a table because that's what everybody understands, but I'm going to call it a matrix anyway. A matrix has some number of categories. Categories have a name. It's got at least one category. That might not be a good It might not be a good rule to put in place, but I'm going to put it in place anyway. And then category has items. That's all good. And the items, there's at least one item in every category. I want to say that so I don't have zero cells. And it's some kind of ordered list. So, well, actually, it doesn't have to be ordered, but let's model it as ordered. And then the items have a name, maybe. So then over there here, we say, well, there's a matrix also has cells, and cells have some kind of address where the address is made up of items from a category, right? So this cell here has address. This cell 10 has address modeling state, happiness happy, tool UML. You could say something like that. So, and these diamonds mean something, apparently. I'm not quite sure what exactly they mean. And I think majority of people don't necessarily know exactly what they do mean. So, but I'm not quite happy with that because, well, I don't know. I'm not quite happy with that because I haven't really expressed all the constraints here. What I really want to say is that there is exactly one cell for every combination of three category, well, in our case three, but for every combination of category item that exists. So it's kind of the product of all the numbers of category items. I want to say there's that many cells, and I also want to say their addresses are something specific, right? I want to say that each cell has a unique address, and so on. And that might prove a little bit difficult to do in UML. I don't know. Somebody can look at this and say that's actually really obvious, George. You can add OCL constraints. I know you can do that, but I'm not sure how you express that. But you could of course say, well, that's not part of the tool. I can model it in a different way. I could say that actually I want to have I only want to represent the cells because the combination of categories and items give me everything I need to know about the number of cells, right? I don't actually having all those cells kind of realized in some modeling world is a bit redundant because the combination of all the category items gives me the cells. But then I need somewhere to put the value. So I probably want to say, well, okay, I could possibly only represent the cells that actually had a value in. And then constrain their address in some way to say that their address must be some combination of these guys. And again, that they're unique and stuff like that. But it's still going to be hard to do in UML, I posit. So if you did this in Z, I think we're in a rather better situation, and this is why I jump into Z for this scenario. Uh-oh, somebody in Z who can do type checking on the fly. So what Z says is, don't worry too much about the notation if you're not familiar with this kind of thing, but Z is to me a great modeling language because you can say things that are completely abstract. You can say, well, I've got some kind of notion of value, I'm not saying anything about it. I've got some kind of notion of name, it's not saying anything about it. Each of these things are just represent a type, or actually they're a set of available, of possible values, which might be infinite. And then I want to say these things in these buckets. So I've got three things here that are called schemas. These are schemas. In a schema, you have kind of two broad areas. One is, well, what's in the schema? So what's a notional part of this class, say? And at the bottom, you've got, well, what are the constraints around this schema? So what constrains these fields that you've got here? So for category, we've got a category has a name. We're not saying anything about how name is implemented. It could be a string, it could be a number, I don't care. And it's got some items, which I'm not bothering to have a schema for items I could do, but I'm just going to say each item is actually a name. And this is just the Z way of saying I've got a sequence of names, which is an ordered set. Here I can very easily say, well, the number of items are greater than zero. That's nothing, because I could say that easily in UML as well. Jumping across address for a second, matrix has a set of categories. Capital P with multiple things, standing for set. Said with a silent P. Yes. So categories is drawn from the power set of all possible categories. And then I want to say, well, each cells in my world, I'm going to model that as a function, a partial function. So I'm going for the kind of, well, actually not necessarily, but I'm going for the idea that these cells represent only those cells that actually have values in. So I've got a function of address, whatever that is, and we'll get to that in a second, to value. And that's kind of like a map. It just says, imagine if we were implementing this, we'd have kind of maybe a hash map or something to say, for each address, here's a value. And I could have that as sparse as I like it to be. So what does this horrible thing down here say? Well, it says, actually, no, let's not go into that. Let's talk about addresses first. An address is, a function that this time saying, for every category that I've got, I want to pick out one name, which is the item within that category that is the unique thing. So when I was in here and I was saying 10 is modeling state, happiness, happy, tool, UML, that's an address with three mappings in its function. So the function says there's a mapping from tool to UML, there's a mapping from happiness to happy, and there's a mapping from modeling to state, and with those three assertions, I have an address. Don't worry if that's a bit arcane, because the point is simply to say that that sufficiently captures what I wanted to capture. This horrible thing says, for every category in the domain of category items, so this just says everything on the left of the function, so the three categories that I'm interested in, the range of C items, so the set of possible items for that category, well, the category item in the address, which is applying the function to C, is selected from one of those. It's a member of one of those. So the constraint basically says you can't select an item that's not in the category. That's all it's trying to say. You can't select an item that's not in the category. And here I think we are exemplifying the problem with Z, is that for a mathematician or somebody who's familiar with Z, that reads perfectly nicely. That sounds like that's perfect English. But to anybody else, it's all getting a bit scary. Especially with these things for which no font exists that can sufficiently capture it. I did in fact draw these out by hand using a there's a Z tool that you can install into Word, which means you can type away and it auto corrects some of these things into the symbols, which is wonderful. So this constraint down here says is the kind of corresponding constraint for the matrix itself that says for every address on the left of this function here, the category item, the left of this function here, corresponds exactly to the set of categories. So what that means is every address has a selection from every single category. So I can't have an address which only has two categories, because that would make no sense. And that would, well, it would specify a whole column or a whole row. Or something like that. Are we reasonably happy that there's only two people in the room who are reasonably happy? It's really funny, because it's really polarizing, isn't it? It's like, you know, I think this is great, because I've captured everything I wanted to capture about the model. You know, this is what I wanted to capture, but can I communicate it to anyone? So this was the motivation for JSizzle, basically. I finally got to the motivation for JSizzle. So the question is, can I improve on this? Can I actually just start writing some Java that captures the same as what the Z captures, but is understandable to my implementation engineers, at least, if not understandable to my actual consumer, you know, to the people I actually want to talk to. So how can I construct something that will communicate my message, but not tell them how to implement it, or even worse, have a button that implements it for them and says, no, mate, you're out of a job. You know, I've managed to do it all in my modeling tool, get stuffed. And, you know, the gap between this Z model that fits on the slide and the implementation of something that actually constructs a useful tool that meets this model is vast. You know, there's a huge difference. So what do I want to do? Well, I'd like to say exactly what I said in Z, right? I'd like to say, well, there's a class called name, there's a class called value. And I don't have anything to say about them. By the way, I'm putting them as member types just because it makes it convenient in Java, because it wants everything in, it wants, you know, only one class in the file. So that's fine. So how do I encode a category? Well, I want to say class category. Now, I'm kind of missing out a lot of the fluff that you see and normally see in a Java class, right? I'm not like private or finals or statics or anything. Because what I want to do is something really concise and succinct that just says what I intend. I'm trying to work at a high level of abstraction. I'm not really interested in whether something's private or protected or anything. I'm just modeling, man. So I want to say, well, category has a name. And so far, so valid Java, right? I mean, Java's not complaining. You know, the type checker's not complaining. This is all good. I want to say, well, a category has a sequence of names. How do I say a sequence in Java? Probably wants a list. It's got a perfectly good interface, which tells me what a list of name items. So good so far? However, I'm now at the stage where I want to put in the number of items is greater than zero. What I really want is a way of expressing an invariant for this class. I want to say, at all times, category has number of items greater than zero. Which, I don't really have a way of doing that in Java. I could create some kind of informal thing, which you know, maybe an interface that says things that only have one item. I don't know. It's quite hard for me to express an invariant like I did in Z. Now, of course, if I was behaving like a if I was being a Java programmer, there might be a number of different ways I approach this, like writing a comment or you know, thinking about things in a different way. But my point here is that I'm trying to work in a modeler's world. I'm trying to apply that to just a language that makes life easy. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to invent a convention. So I'm going to say, well, I'm going to invent the OK the OK method. And the OK method, in my convention, so I'm now inventing a language, I admit. In this world, I want to make that invariant statement. So I want to say items is empty. So I'm probably not. Just if you set aside the notion of that we're actually coding Java here, you can probably see that, well, this is pretty good for communication, right? I can now communicate to a Java developer with some provisos, which we'll get to in a minute. So anyway, let's finish the job anyway. So we've got some kind of notion of an address. What was an address? Address was, if you recall, a function of category to name. Well, functions there are functions in Java, but I'm going to implement that as a map. Because actually a map makes more sense in this case than the function did. Because when people think of functions, they think of methods kind of thing. Whereas what I'm actually want to talk about here is state. I want to talk about a current state. So I want to say there's a map of, well, category to name. So that's the item. So a map of, for each category, pick out one name. That's the item that makes up the address. Category items. And again, we wanted to say something about an address to say that every item is every item in that map is selected from the category. It's not selected from some other category. So in order to do that, well, ideally I'd like to do that declaratively, like I did in the Z. But I don't think I really have the opportunity to do that declaratively. Although if we get time at the end, I'm not sure we're going to have time for anything at the end. Except going to bed. We could come back and make this fully declarative. But for the time being, I'm actually going to just implement a for loop and say, for every category in the key set of category items, well, if the c.items does not contain the application of category items to C, then I'm in trouble. Things are bad. Reasonably happy with that? So what we're asserting is that in this map of category to item, which I've modeled as just a name, the name has to be selected from the available items in the category. So, you know, I can read that, I think. I wanted to say some things about the matrix itself. So I wanted to say that there was a set of categories, which are the categories of the matrix. And I wanted to say there were some cells. And cells was a map of address to value. So I want to say map of address to value. These are my cells. And I wanted to say something about the invariant on the matrix as well, which was to say for every address, the address must include all the categories involved. So I'm going for address A in the key set of cells, and I do basically the same thing if not categories dot equals the address, and otherwise it's fine. It's a bit arcane. So we're saying, well, actually, we could do it the other way around. That might probably be a bit more edifying. If the category items from the address, every category that's mentioned in there, doesn't equal the set of categories we've got allowed in our matrix, then we're in trouble. I'm going to get carried away and implement all sorts of other invariants as well. And so I'm saying that every cell is uniquely specified. That I can't, in this, I can't assign a value to a whole range of cells. It always has to be just one cell. Because if I didn't mention one of the categories, if I was in my model and I didn't mention a tool, but I did say state happy, then I'd effectively have this whole column. But in my model, I just want to say, well, you can have a value in a cell. I'm not saying you can have a value in a whole column. So we kind of done it in Java. So that's the talk was entitled "Do It in Java," modeling in Java. I think there's some problems with this. I think on one level, I've been quite successful. I think I've captured everything I wanted to capture. I've done it with a few kind of fiddles. I've kind of pretended something that wasn't necessary. You know, okay doesn't mean anything in Java. If it did, it might be interesting, but OK is just a convention. And yes, I could introduce an interface that defines what OK means and has a nice comment in it that says OK means the invariant's OK for this class. But then I'd have to, implement OKable. OKable. And it all starts to get a bit kludgy. And I if I wanted this to be to be lovely Java, I'd probably have to put some privates and publics and things in there. I don't really want to do that. But there are much more serious problems with this, which is that Java being an implementation language, it brings along with it a whole pile of semantics. There's a whole pile of meaning behind what I've created here that is obvious to the mind of a Java programmer, but anybody else looking at this doesn't necessarily understand. And in fact, as a consequence of some of those semantics, my model is fundamentally broken. it doesn't work because I haven't specified the equals method for any of my classes. So to say that the category items key set equals categories, well, that equals is fine in this case because I'm talking about sets and they have a perfectly well-defined meaning for equals. But actually comparing the categories over here to the category items over here, to the ones in the key set, comparing these categories to these categories, depends in this model on reference equality. So there's pointers. There are pointers behind the scenes here. I don't want pointers behind the scenes. I want to be able to say this category is the same as this category. Any Java developer leading this will immediately will probably spot the flaw and say, well, hang on, that ain't going to work unless you have a global registry of all categories. And where's your global registry implementation? And all that kind of stuff. That's not the only problem. There's a whole pile of problems. I could also have nulls. Nulls could be flying around. I haven't checked for null ever. There's nothing in this model that says category items can't be null, at which point these methods will kind of fall over. I guess that's not necessarily a problem with my model, but I don't want to accept null. I don't want my model to have any notion of null. I want category items to always be instantiated, as it were, in model land. Mutation, things can change. So somebody could, if they were working with these classes, notionally, I mean, this is a model, so actually, I don't actually want anybody to model it working with these classes, but if a Java developer was thinking about this, they'd be going, well, I can just replace, that's a public, well, it's not actually public, it's package something, a variable, I can just rip it out and replace it with something else, and then you know, I don't know, what happens then? I don't want to say things like that. I don't want to allow these things to change. We've already talked about default visibility. These things are procedural, although, you know, they're kind of neat procedural in the sense that you can read it. But I don't really want to be giving a machine processing instructions just to express a model. Of course, we've already talked about the OK method is fully it's just a convention, and it's all a bit painful. If I wanted to actually animate this model, then you can probably imagine the code to do it would be a bit fraught, because I can create a new category quite happily, but then I have to set its name and set its items to be something before I can do anything with it. And if that was my convention, then all well and good, but it's just a bit painful. So what I want to do is fix it. I want to fix all of those problems, and I can do that by like this. Actually, that doesn't fix all the problems, but it does a pretty good job. What this does, okay, to dive a bit into implementation land, what putting the schema annotation on there does is it says to a bit of funky stuff behind the scenes that I don't want Java semantics anymore. I actually want everything that I've written here to have something a bit like Z semantics. I want all of my classes to be value objects. I want them to have an equals method that just checks all of their state, and I want that equals method to be there for free. I don't want to have to write that equals method. I want everything to be final. I don't want things to mutate. I want null checking. I want to make sure if I instantiated one of these things, it would fall over if I gave it null. What this annotation does is there's basically a funky annotation handler sitting behind the scenes, which is messing with the Java syntax tree, and just before it gets compiled, and it's injecting things into the syntax tree before it gets compiled. So if I open up the outline, there's probably rather a lot more in this outline than you might otherwise have expected. For a start, matrix, actually. If I open the type hierarchy, matrix. Matrix now extends something called binding. I didn't tell it that. I did by putting the schema annotation on. And binding is that class, is basically that interface that I suggested a minute ago of, well, it brings along the semantics of, you know, the Z notation, brings along the value objects, brings along the notion of invariance and that kind of thing. And a whole pile of other stuff got generated as I was going along. I'm not going to go through all of it, but if I look at category, for example, category has now got a constructor. So category, before I say that, items and name in category are now final. So I can't mess with, once I've set the name, I can't mess with it. I've got immutable classes. And I've got a constructor which sets up all the fields. So now I've got all the semantics I wanted. And you might kind of look at that and go, well, you only wanted to use this to communicate. Why did you go to all this effort to bring along a pile of semantics? Well, actually, I don't want it just for modeling, because what we started this whole conversation with was I want to create something that allows me to map my model to my implementation code. So I do want to instantiate these classes. I do want to do stuff with them. But before I do that, there's something I want to do just straight away, which is I want to animate my model. I want to try some things. I want to try and set some states and check whether they're okay. Oh, by the way, just before I do that, I need to do one extra thing, which is JSizzle doesn't know which methods are your invariant methods unless you tell it. So we're just going to make these Boolean OK methods invariant methods. And now JSizzle knows that for a category to be valid, this OK method must return true. So let's animate my matrix. So to do this, I'm going to just create a unit test. So I can go matrix M equals new matrix. So in order to create a matrix, I need to give it a set of something. I need to give it the categories that it's going to hold, because I'm not allowing things to be null at any point. I have to initialize it. So I'm going to say check invariant. Sorry, I did that a bit too quickly. For M, because M extends binding. It's not just a class as we had a minute ago. It's actually got quite a few little methods that might help me out as I go along. And one of those, which I want to point out, is this check invariant method. And what that does is it goes through all the invariants in that class and checks them. Although actually it doesn't, because these classes are defined to be immutable, it actually checks the invariants when you construct them. and then check invariant, all it does is throws an exception for all those invariants that were ballsed up when you constructed the thing in the first place. Everything's final in the sense that you must not change any field of a category after it's been constructed. In that, I'm following the world of Z, because in Z, you can't, there's no notion within Z of changing anything. It's a fully declarative language. If you want to represent a new state, you need to create a new binding that represents that state. And you can assert things about the state change. So you can say in Z, it's got this kind of funky thing behind the scenes that, well, not behind the scenes, that where you can make a schema that represents a transformation of one state to a before state to an after state. And you can assert things about that transformation. So you can say, well, what are the preconditions? What must be true about before and what must be true about after? What are the postconditions? And Z basically does that by creating a new schema, which says before, after, well, what am I saying about it? The explicit purpose of JSizzle was to bring that Z semantic into Java, for better or for worse. It could be that actually I'm cleverer than the people who invented Z. It's possible. But no, I didn't want to go there. I just wanted to say, right, I know Z works as a modeling language. How can I make it better at communicating, and how can I make it better at relating to implementation? If you want to create an operation, if you want to represent an operation, you create something called a delta. Sorry, no, you create an operation class which represents a before state and an after state, and there's some utilities in JSizzle to allow you to do that. And you can read all about it. but for the time being, I just want to say things about the current state. So if I run animate matrix, I don't know if you can see that, but things are not going well. I get a null pointer exception. So JSizzle has got code injected in it that the constructor checks for nulls. Well, great, fantastic. So I'm going to do the next thing, which is to say it's an empty set. Empty map, it's all good, and I can get rid of the... So I'm constructing it with no categories and no cells. Now, according to my model, that's fine, actually. No problem. Check invariant returns is quite happy. But that actually points to a problem with our model, because I said here that I must have one category. I actually like the model better. I agree with Robert. I like the model better when you can have zero categories. I think that's fine, but actually I said those are going to be one category. So I'm going to be consistent, and I'm going to say, well, I want another invariant on the... I can't call it OK. I'll call it at least one category. And lovely, I can say return. Do the same as I did before. The convenient thing about having this invariant annotation means that I don't have to call everything OK. I can give things names, which is, to my mind, an improvement on Z and demonstrates how I'm cleverer than the people who invented Z. I can name my invariants, and the useful thing about naming my invariants is I then get a... Yikes! I didn't want to show you that! I then get at least one category failing in matrix. So there's basically lots of funky stuff going on behind the scenes, which means that if I construct one of these guys, check its invariant, I get an exception that says your invariant's failed. It tells me what invariant's failed. That invariant check, incidentally, we're not exercising it here, but that invariant check is deep. So it will check everything. It checks the matrix invariant. It also checks the invariants of everything that's inside the matrix. It just goes and tells you if anything failed. And so that little trace that we saw for the J unit, that can be a lot more useful than it looks like there, because it can tell you something that's happening right deep down inside your model. So I've created a model. I've animated it. Great. I can now try different states and see if my model does good things. But I'm still not there, because what I want to do is actually relate this to a implementation. And I was going to triumphantly say, here's one I made earlier, if I hadn't accidentally pressed the button a minute ago. So here's Quantrix Modeler. This is a IDBS product. done by the lovely people in Portland, Maine, which we use for scientific applications. We use it for managing scientific data. It was originally intended for financial applications. It came out of Lotus Improv, which was an attempt to improve on traditional spreadsheets. It's a multi-dimensional, multi-categorical, categorical variable guy. So here's what I wanted basically. Here's my tool, and here's I can add in UML, I can add in Z, I can add in Spock, which nobody said anything about. I can add in what was it, Smalltalk, and I can go modeling, and I can add in what was it, happiness. So I can say I've got happy, and I've got unhappy, and I've got state versus behavior. And it behaves in the way that I was hoping for with my thing. So I can swap these over. And if I put something in there and something in there, actually nobody used Spock, what was it? UML was about 6 and two people weren't happy with it, that kind of thing. And Smalltalk was, somebody was happy with using Smalltalk for state, whatever. And I can swap those over. I can even filter it. I can even say, only talk about state and only talk about behavior. And I can drag these around, and it's great. Go out and buy it. But what I want to do is say, well, obviously, I mean, this is hundreds of thousands of lines of code. I want to assert that this meets my model. I want to map this thing to my model. And I can do that. And I have done. I'm not going to try and do that live. You'll be thankful to learn. What I've done is I've created some specification mapping classes, I call them. By convention, I put the specification in the spec folder and the mappings into the source folder. Quantrix conveniently has a plugin architecture. It's got Eclipse sitting there behind the scenes, so I can add in plugins that run on startup and do stuff. It also conveniently has an automation API, so I can hook into events inside Quantrix and listen to things. And what I've chosen to do is have a plugin activator. So I've created a plugin. This whole project that we've been working in is a plugin. And it gets ourselves a reference to Quantrix, and basically it says that every time you see an event that says there's a model being opened, wire yourself up. So this is all just boilerplate that takes me into the world of every time I see a model. Sorry, there's a real inconvenient collision of semantics here. Model for Quantrix is the document. So whenever you see model in here, I'm talking about the document. So this is a Quantrix API thing. I'm listening to the document, and when a matrix gets added to the model, when a matrix gets added to the document, I go further and I map up that matrix. Because what I wanted to talk about originally was matrices. I didn't care about documents or you know, properties panels or anything. I just wanted to talk about matrices. So I dive into here, and this is basically where the action is. When I see a matrix, the first thing I do is convert that matrix. So this matrix is the Quantrix implementation class. It's their API class that represents a matrix. When I get one of those, I transform it using this function, which I'll talk about in a minute. I transform it into a instance of my model. So spec matrix returns one of these guys. Boink. With one of those, I can check its invariance. So I'm doing a bit of a brute force approach here. I'm basically instrumenting Quantrix. So every time anything happens in Quantrix, I'm materializing a whole model, materializing the model, and then checking its invariant and saying, I used to locate. And then I'm listening to a whole pile of different kinds of event, which is, you know, adding categories, adding items, renaming stuff. Anytime I get any kind of event in which the matrix has changed, I rematerialize this model and say, are you still okay? Now, obviously, that's a bit brute force. In my defense, I'm only doing this to to check in testing that it's my model is still valid. I will not include this plugin in a distribution of Quantrix. I don't want it materializing a whole pile of Java objects anytime anything changes. Plus, I don't have to be so coarse-grained about it. I could, when I see a category change, I could just model that category and not model the whole matrix again and check its old invariant. Of course, then I would be lowering the checking that might be happening at a different level. So if I'm only checking the categories, I might lose the matrix invariant. But I could always check that later again. You know, so there's a balance to be found between slowing down your application massively and getting everything perfect. So how do I transform one of these Quantrix API objects into a model object? Well, effectively, I need to create a new one, and every time I see a category, I need to change that category into one of my categories, one of these guys. And every time I see an item, I need to be able to translate that item into one of my name guys. So I won't go through the whole details of that, but basically that's all of this code does. And this is, from what I've seen of doing this in JSizzle, this is fairly characteristic, that the amount of code it takes you to map the model to the implementation is roughly about the same size as the model itself. It's a bit bigger sometimes. But of course it's massively smaller than the implementation, which is absolutely enormous. And sometimes I have to do funky things to make that happen. You might be noticing there's a few more annotations going on here. Jay Curry has appeared. Jay Curry is a utility for functional programming in Java that translates any method in a Java implementation class into a Google Guava function that can be then used in transformation methods. So this spec item, for example, this spec item takes a node, which is the Quantrix thing that represents an item, and comes back with a name. Spec item is used up here as if it were an object. So this method is being used as if it were an object. If it were in C, this is like a function pointer. What this is doing is converting methods in Java into level to first class functions that can then be used in transformation methods. That's basically just a bit of boasting, because that's Jay Curry spun off from JSizzle, because what I wanted to do was do things more declaratively. And in order to do things more declaratively, I had to do some of this funky stuff. Basically, this class would be a bit bigger if I didn't have Jay Curry sitting around doing things. So if I run Quantrix, actually, this plugin was running a minute ago, and when I added items and did things, it wasn't complaining. So what I need to do is actually break it. I need to be abusive and say, well, I'm the customer here. You're only allowed one item. Any example I could come up with. This is the modeler trying to take over the world and being stupid, right? But still, what I want to demonstrate is that when I run Quantrix now, by default, there's always one item in a category, which is nice. If I add another item, kapow, something goes wrong. There's an unexpected error in the application, and I send a bug report to Quantrix saying, you don't correspond to my model anymore, you. No, probably shouldn't press that. Actually, I'm not wired, so I'm okay. And behind the scenes, we can see what the exception was. Okay, failed in category. So I need to name my okay method a bit better, and then I'll be happy. So obviously, running the instrumented application every time I want to do this is not going to be a great way of having repeatable test cases. What I want to do is animate the application in unit tests. So I want to throw unit tests at the application and check the invariant in the unit tests. And actually, I don't need to call check invariant anymore, because the check invariant gets called by the instrumentation. So all I want to do is run, what I want to do now is create test cases. I'm not actually going to do it, but create test cases that animate Quantrix. And Quantrix, as we've now seen, will throw an exception if my model doesn't correspond to my implementation. So hopefully, you see that is the real reason for JSizzle to exist. I've created something that is a model that corresponds to a Z model that I created before, and expresses everything I wanted to express highly abstract, about my application. I've wired that into my application using a chunk of code that's about the same size as the model. But what I have now is a checkable correspondence between the model and the application. Now, it's not perfect, because ideally what I want to do is get into the notion of, well, does my application correspond to my model at all times? Not just in the test cases, and not just when I run it ad hoc and add some items. I want to have mathematical proof that it's exactly right. And no, JSizzle doesn't go that far. JSizzle is about taking a realistic approach and saying, well, I can create a model, I can create an implementation, I can check the correspondence, I can run test cases that give it specific scenarios and show specific things about it. But that's it. That's as far as I want to go. But hopefully I'm a lot further on than I might have been using UML or using Zed, because when the implementation changes, it might break my unit tests. And the unit tests are not checking the implementation. The unit tests are checking the correspondence between the implementation and the model. I might change the model, and then I can run a unit test suite to see if the application still corresponds to the model. I can reason about the model and show that the model has certain properties, maybe security properties or whatever, using the kind of tools that you get in the world of Zed, and know that those properties apply to my application to a good degree of certainty, depending on how many unit test cases I've run. So that's basically it. We've seen how we can implement. I think, you know, one thing I wanted to emphasize was, when you're doing this implementation, you've got loads of options, because you've just got Java classes over here and Java classes over here. You can map them together in any way you like. Now, it's always going to be a balance, because some ways of mapping introduce imperfections into how well you're corresponding things together. You might be doing that for a very good reason. You might be doing that to reduce the amount of mapping code you've got. You might be doing that to reduce the amount of overhead you've got running it in an instrumented state, whatever. You've got those options, and you just, because it's just Java. There's a big gap here between, I've shown this, that there's a big gap between the model and the implementation. The implementation is huge, the model is tiny, but I can still bridge that gap. I can still get right the way up to that model. Perhaps going beyond what I could have done in the implementation language in the raw, just by creating interfaces, really high-level interfaces or whatever. And we've shown that, you know, even with interfaces, we can't do a particularly good job on invariants, unless we were to choose a language like Eiffel, which has got preconditions and an invariant checking in it. But even then, it's tied to the implementation. I have to make my model in that world. I have to do my model in the implementation language. Here, what I've done is created a model at whatever level of abstraction I like. It can be up in the sky. I could say only one thing and still be able to correspond that model to the implementation. And there's a bit. The Zed stuff, I haven't gone too far with the correspondence to Zed, because there are still a few things about the language, about the JSizzle language, which don't really correspond quite with Zed. For example, my procedural implementations, they don't fly. I can't translate them into Zed. But when I make them a bit more declarative, then maybe I can. I could create a translation that takes JSizzle and creates a Zed out of it. And yes, it would only work for certain models that actually behave themselves that did things that Zed supports. But I have that option. I can do it. And then I get the power of Zed, as well as the power of relating implementation to the... That's it. Well, okay, so what I was trying to say at the beginning was that the idea here is to compile a model into something that can be related to the code directly. So that's the kind of bottom line. If we had modeling tools that did that, didn't try to generate the code, just compile down into something that can be related using the power of the implementation language, then that's what I'm trying to prove here. I created a tool for doing it just to demonstrate. To answer the question directly, though, JSizzle has been used in Angular once, for sure. It's been used to verify itself. So JSizzle has a model. And the implementation of JSizzle has unit tests that check the correspondence of itself against its own model while it's checking its own model. Which was just in order to get a higher grade at the dissertation.
You mentioned model threat.
Oh, sorry. So Quantrix Modeler is an application that we sell that is a it's not a, well it is a modeling tool, but it's not related to JSizzle in any way. I was only using that as a worked example to show that, you know, I can have an application, I can have a model, I can have them correspond to each other. And it has this unfortunate thing that Quantrix models. Maybe it was a bad choice for that reason. But yes, JSizzle is unrelated to Quantrix. I was using Quantrix as an example.
Jonathan Burns from ex-Oxford University.
No. Oh, right.
Yes. Yes, well, it looks very nice. I mean, how much of the Z toolkit have you covered?
So it depends what you mean.
Well, Mike Spivey's book, got all the symbols.
Right,
do you have an equivalent in JSizzle?
No. I mean, there comes a point when, as you see, effectively all I've done is taken classes and made them schemas and created a notation for invariants and taken fields and made them schema fields, you know, semantically. What I haven't done is made a correspondence with the Z language for the full mathematics of actually writing those constraints. However, I'm kind of envisaging that such a mapping could be made because, you know, I did there. I had sets, I had lists, I had maps.
I was just seeing how far you've got.
right. So I haven't tried to actually, you know, map up the Java 2.
But if you did that, maybe a more interesting mapping would be to take existing Z specs and put it into your JSizzle.
Yeah,
and then have a tool, a good Z tool, which we don't have at the moment.
Fantastic. I mean, if we, I think it
would
be easier.
But that would depend on actually covering all of the Z toolkit.
Yeah, so I think it would be easier to translate Z into JSizzle than
to translate Z. Once you've done the toolkit.
Yeah, so once you had that translation encoded somehow, which I don't.
No, okay. Well, that's another MSC project.
A PhD this time.
Yes. I mean, just comparing it with other tools. I mean, have you looked at the Alloy tool? Because I guess that's the sort of
briefly. It's kind of almost a direct competitor in a way.
Well, exactly. I was just. Yeah. And I mean, people have also done stuff in Prolog.
Yes.
And so on. Again, that's slightly.
But I mean, so I guess I didn't really emphasize this, but what I wanted to achieve was be able to use my Java tool. You know, with my syntax completion, with my outline view, and with my package hierarchy, and with my source control, and with all these bits and pieces we get for free by using Java, you know, I just use them with no repercussions whatsoever. You know, it was type checking as I was typing. It was doing all the things I expect of a Java IDE, and even Alloy doesn't get anywhere near the power of a Java IDE, for you know, even the tools that come with Alloy don't. So. You know, it's kind of a shortcut. It's just saying, well, yeah, don't invent something new. Yeah. Subset what you've got.
Yes. I mean, I guess one little thing I'd point out is the Z spec nicely fitted on one slide, whereas your JSizzle needed two or three, at least twice as much, I would say. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You were scrolling up and down in your equivalent.
It is true. Yeah. It is true. I mean, it is a little bit more verbose because...
I guess you could.
I'll get that into full screen view. So
stop the curly brackets having their own lines, but you know.
Yeah, I've got squiggly brackets. I could put the squiggly brackets on the same line.
Yes, if you really wanted to squeeze it in.
I've got a big font. Yeah. You know.
It's not. It's a small font. It's smaller than the Z font.
Is it?
You have a look at your Z.
Oh well. Yeah. Okay.
I think you'll find. Well, actually, perhaps no. Well, it would be if you make that full size.
Yeah. No, you're right. No, you're right. Of course, it is. It is a bit more verbose than Z because it's, well.
Yeah, but not that much more. It's only twice as verbose. So it's not
right.
Bad.
It's not as verbose as the implementation.
Yeah, exactly. and
it's got named invariants.
Yeah. Well, you could sort of do that in Z with schemas, but we don't normally.
What the named invariants?
So there would be a way. If you wanted to do it in Z.
Yes, but then that would make Z more verbose.
Well, it would, yes.
Yeah. No, of course, yeah.
Anyway, yes, looks very nice. Thank you. And is this all available freely?
Yes. Sorry, I didn't put up a link, did I? Yes. It's on Google.
Okay, you'll find it with JSizzle, yes.
Unfortunately, 1 month before I tried to register the Google site, somebody created something called JSizzle, and then gallingly forgot about it.
Yes.
On Google. So it's actually called Java Sizzle if you search for Java Sizzle.
Oh, okay.
I'll send out the link anyway. I'll give Jeff the link so that so you can go to it. Actually, the easiest way to go to it is to go to jcurry.org and then link from jcurry to jsizzle. Because I actually thought jcurry was far more useful because it's much smaller and it's just about functional first-class methods.
Right.
I thought that would get more traction, actually, than jsizzle. So anyway, go to jcurry.org and link to jsizzle is the easy way.
Right. Anyway, we'll hand over to a non-Z person.
Robert.
Have you got time to sketch out how you would implement your for each quantifiers declaratively?
I have. I could probably do it quite quickly, actually, if everybody's happy with me doing that.
I'd be interested to see in particular whether that makes it shorter in light of the previous
question.
Because that's something that was one line in Z that's now spanning four, five, six lines.
Yeah, unfortunately that's the case. So what we want to do in basically the OK method of address, should we do categories first? This is probably easier. Instead of that, we want to say, we want to do something a bit like the Z guide. We want to do a for all. And Lava's got a nice way of doing that. So you can say, right, return. Let's be optimistic. We can do it in one line. we want to say, it's actually in the iterables class. Doesn't matter. All. And we want to give it some kind of iterable, which is easy enough. So we want to give it a key set of cells. So we want to say, for everything that's in the key set of cells, what we want is a predicate that takes a address and says whether it's OK or not. What the address OK method needs to actually do is take the category items, take the key set from the category items and compare them to the categories. So there is a predicate that is equals. So where is it? Equals, so there's is it predicates? Equal to categories. We can say something is equal to categories. But unfortunately, that's not a predicate of address. That's a predicate, well, it's a predicate of object. I haven't said what it's a predicate of. But what I need to do is, from the address, which is the thing that's passed into the predicate, I need to get out the category items key set. I need to get all the categories that are mentioned by the address. So, kind of a bit stuck now because I haven't got a standard predicate I can use for that. I need to create a predicate object somewhere that does that. But what I don't want to do is implement a new predicate object because that would take my line count back up again, right?
Could you use that function?
Actually, you don't need to because every function that I put into a jsizzle schema gets an as function for free. So at schema, you might have noticed, sorry, I didn't say this earlier, that at schema is recursive. So the category is a schema just because the matrix is a schema. Every member type of matrix is a schema. And you saw over here that a whole pile of stuff was getting generated. Some of this pile of stuff that gets generated is a whole pile of utility functions for everything that's available. So there's a getter for get name. There's a function that gets the name of a category. There's a function that gets the items in the category. There's functions that do everything. Unfortunately, there isn't a function that gets the categories mentioned by an address. Because there's no... I don't drill down into map and start adding members into map. So there is a function that gets the category items, but I don't want the category items. I want the categories that are mentioned. So I can do that. I can say set category... It's trivial. Mentioned... categories and return category items key set. And as I say, I get mentioned categories now appears, well, let's make that a bit less verbose. Categories now appears as a function, a top-level function in the address class, as a static top-level function in the address class. So now I can say, well, what I want to do is do a function composition, or rather a function composition. I want to compose, getting the key set first, and then checking that it's equal to. So I can do that. Compose. So I can compose the predicate, which is the thing I had already, with a function that gets me from an address to something I want to compare to categories. And conveniently, that's what I just created. So I can now say address dot, look at that. There's a static function that takes an address and gives back a set of categories. There. I pinch that guy. Now I have a... No, I don't. Why don't I? So, this compose returns me a predicate address. Why doesn't it like it? Oh, predicate cannot be used to type. Phew. So now I can say, well, for all the that's okay. That's one. So I added three lines there. Shall we do the other one? Oh, I'll make that bit better.
I mean, I could comment on the lack of legibility of components all equal to one as rather defeating the object of lifting this to Java in a way.
Indeed. So there's kind of two aspects to it we've been talking about. One is readability, and the other is mapping it to the implementation. The readability actually took a heck of a dive when I put that schema annotation in there. Now the Java developer goes, well, what the hell does that mean? And I have to explain to him that rips out the semantics of Java and puts in the semantics of Z. And the Java developer now goes, what? What's the semantics of Z? So yeah, I think on the readability front, trivially, it's still not trivially, kind of at a high level, it's kind of okay. You know, a Java developer can look at it and go, there's some invariants. When they're implementing a for loop, I can understand them. But actually, when it comes to actually communicating to the implementation engineers, there's a limit. You know, it's not brilliant.
But in terms of readability, might you not do something by saying, okay, we'll put Z in as comments. Right, so we know what Z you meant, and for those people to read Z, that's fine. Mm. Here's what it means.
Yeah, I mean, there's a question of whether that OK method is more or less understandable than that OK method.
I understand. But it's like the...
You could put both.
It's like the Rosetta Stone. Say it in three languages, right?
You got more likelihood of getting it in one.
Well, it's a halfway step between the Z and the Java, isn't it? The real Java, the implementation Java.
Indeed, yeah. No, right. Absolutely.
So it might actually have value, perhaps, in...
Yeah, especially if it started as a Z model in the way that Jonathan was suggesting. Yeah. Yes, and speaking of which.
But that's English is not probably terribly close to Java.
When you write the letter back, you know,
So what I also didn't do was create a way of taking one of these guys and using JavaDoc to create a readable document out of it. I did it by hand in my dissertation, but